The Conference Committee on House File 1006 will come to order. It's 5 minutes to two on a Saturday during the day. So we have before us the HABA provisions, the side-by-side that we were given last night. And I'll start wading through it, and I'm sure Mr. Watson will take over because he took better notes than I did. Sections 1 and 2 on the first and second pages were both passed in another bill last year, so we believe that we can delete those from this bill.
Section 1 and 2.
The House provisions, sections 1 and 2, the voter integrity and voter access account, and the Help America Vote Act complaints, both of those were passed last year, so we can delete those from consideration today. Is that correct, Mr. Black?
Madam Chair and members, yes, they were passed in, I think it was Chapter 7 of the first special session last year.
Okay. So we will suggest that. Okay. Page R2, your Section 3, our Section 1. As best as we can tell, they are identical. So we would suggest adopting those two. Another body shows up. Are you agreeable to that? Okay, let's take the Senate position since they're identical. Your Section 4 and our Section 3, this is statewide registration system. Shall we both agree that the proper terminology now is voter registration applications? I believe you did that in something.
Yes.
Okay. So we'll just instruct the reviser, whoever puts this thing together, is it the reviser? Is it?
Yeah.
Okay. That all places where the phrase registration forms or registration cards are used, we will use voter registration applications. That acceptable? It's just a. Okay. Yeah. All right. These two sections are a little bit different. And we can either set them aside for right now, or we can talk them through. But the sections that are different are on the Senate side, lines 3.5 and 6, and lines 3.10 through 3.17. So we'll come back to those for right now. Hmm?
Madam Chair, if I may. Also in the House position, the last sentence there, 5.22 to 5.25, is also.
That's also different, yes. And I have written here, ask for an explanation on this piece. On page R13, there seemed to be language that addressed this as well, and we were wondering whether it was necessary here with it being on R13. So we can, you guys can look at that and we'll come back. Back on page R3, when we come back to that, if the counties can be prepared to talk to us about provision 11, lines 3.5 and 3.6, provide access to municipal clerks to use the system to enter or modify absentee voting records. If they can give us some information on why they asked us to put that in there, we'd appreciate that. Oh, we have a quorum.
Good. Senator
Limmer's on his way. Great. The page R4 your subdivision 2 about rules and our subdivision 2 about rules are the same, except you have an effective date, which I believe is no longer necessary. Mr. Black, is that correct?
That is moot. That's correct.
Okay, so we would suggest deleting the effective date on the House side. Take the Senate position. I forget that's how we do that. You okay there?
3.21 to 4.11?
Exactly, yes. Mr. Watson, help me on the next one, would you please? Oh, this is a contested provision. This is the mail registration thing, and mail in person and mail in registration. So maybe we'll go beyond that. Skip down to R6. Section 8 and R Section 5, is that what you were thinking? That's in Pittman?
It was mentioned here.
Okay. You have a couple provisions that we don't have. Lines 8.27, you added the phrase the identity and. So say an individual may prove identity and residence for purposes of registering by showing these things. You also put in pretty much every place a picture identification card as opposed to a valid identification card on our side, not saying a picture identification. You did not put those in 1703, so 1703, your more current wish then. So then we're suggesting take the Senate side, and that would make it the same. On the Senate side, we use the language that conforms to what Hava uses, saying presenting a license rather than showing. Mr. Black? Representative Kudrow?
Madam Chair, I'd like to hear from Mr. Black or Mr. Kielkowski before we...
Mr. Kielkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And members, the question that I have is that as we go down this list and we take a look at some of those issues that you're just bringing up, we did do some changes as we went in through 1703, but as I'm understanding, there's other provisions that are linked to that within the way that we developed those in 1703. So we may have, in essence, on a particular provision there, but it's linked to something that we're not even addressing within the confines of what we have before us, because they were also other things addressed in 1703. And I think one of the problems that we're facing today is that if we're going to strictly stick to this, we went through to redevelop and reintroduce and talk about some of the issues that were raised from our bill last year, and we did the changes within the committee structure coming through to the floor, that I have a problem sometimes in the sense that since we don't have 1703 as is in front of us, it's hard to just follow from here and then go back over and see how we handle it later within a different provision. And so that's kind of where I'm at right now, in the sense that I'd like to kind of take a look at how we go through this whole notion.
All right, we're going to hold this provision aside then to come back to later.
I would think so.
That's what I would suggest, Madam Chair, that we hold. If there's some question, that we could at least have some language to look at to get a comparison.
All right. The next section looks to be substantially different, or at least more words. Senator Marty?
I think we asked, I think we'd like to get the ponies on this for clarification, because what this does is put the voter registration form or card or whatever it's called into statute, and I'm not sure. I think that may have been an interest to the counties, and I guess I wonder if we can hear from whoever that was.
Mr. Corbett, are you here? You are here.
Madam Chair. Madam Chair, Kevin Corbett with Washington County. The stricken language on lines 8.2 through 8.4, I think what you're referring to, clearly the intent of that is the rules of the Secretary of State, as they read now, do not allow for the HABA compliance. And so by striking that, it says that a card to be used must meet the requirements set out in the section just above it. So the Secretary's office had moved the rule language into the statutes, and this says then that any card needs to conform to this subdivision rather than to the rule.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I'm completed.
Okay. Representative
Little? Madam Chairman, Mr. Corbett, my concern here is as to unintended consequences. I'm concerned that if we don't have a centralized author of voter registration applications, and so admiring of the Secretary's work, I always carry one with me, that if it's not a single unitary source as to what is on the VR card, and indeed these matters are in statute such that they would suggest that we could have 87 possible permutations of this document, or perhaps even more if we drill down to the beyond the county level, to the municipal clerk level, or even any non-governmental organization developing their own voter registration card, provided that the requirements of the statute were, in a sense, complied with. We could have very different formats and forms, and while you know, not trying to be a stickler as to uniformity just for the sake of uniformity, I'm concerned that, let us say, bringing in the deficient registration issue, what if one format used had very tiny boxes for the putting in of the driver's license number such that it was less legible than perhaps other formulations by the Secretary of State or in other counties, such that you had disparate results? Because if the driver's license registration as a HAVA requirement is less legible, presumably one could have more deficient registrations and more folks obliged to proffer identification at the polling place, and clearly both House members and Senate members are committed to try and avoid that in as many cases as we can. So I'm concerned that a wide open set of authors as to the VR card leads to, or at least the potentiality of, disparate results of people being bounced from mail-in registration or early registration, pre-registration, such that they have to proffer additional documentations, which might be a barrier for them being actually able to vote on election day. Why are my concerns as to multiple authors either not well placed as to this language or not well taken generally?
Madam Chair, Senator Lippman, the intent was not to have 87 different cards, and I believe the Senate Council has worked on some language here that would, I think, deal with your concerns, so that it would be basically the card prepared by the Secretary of State, any card that is agreed to as an experimental card, and the NVRA cards would be the options for the counties to use. So I think that they have prepared some language that you might want to look at that is acceptable to the counties.
Representative, and I have a question. Why would it open up, why would having the language in statute as opposed to in rule open up your envisioning 87 different cards?
Madam Chairman, members, I'm concerned that that the statutory language is, in a sense, a recitation of the ideas that are in the rules, but there isn't a format set forth. I believe the Rule 8200, I mean, in a sense, although it's done in text, lays out almost a design of the voter registration card and how it looks, and it really does set some fairly tight parameters. All of those ideas are codified in statute, I mean, as to the requirements, but if you don't have the, in a sense, the look and feel tightly spelled out as they are in rules, then I think you open it up to multiple authors being able to comply, and in a sense, my concern of that is not that that it's a pride in authorship thing, but that there might be disparate results because you know, some forms may well be better than others.
Madam Chair, I don't feel any reason to have it in statute as opposed to rule. I recognize the rule has to be updated to have the yes and no boxes on. I do think, Representative Lippman, I think this is an awful card to try and read and try and fill out, and worse, to try and, I've never figured out why so many people who make forms, and I know my political party for its caucus attendee thing, they have these little boxes for each little letter. People don't all write their names. I usually write without little boxes around each letter, and it's extremely hard to get that up. Also, reverse type. I mean, people, we had a discussion in the Senate committee last week about the fact how many people miss this little box, yes or no, because they don't see the numbers, because the numbers are reversed out and you look at the form. I would say this form doesn't look ugly, but it certainly is very hard to fill out and very hard to read for a lot of people. And I guess my point is, I saw a form that I believe the counties had prepared, a form, the first one they had, I didn't think complied with HAVA. They showed me that they have one that they feel does comply with HAVA, and I thought it was much easier to fill out. And it seemed to me, if we have one or two different forms, let the counties choose which way they go is fine. I think the urgent thing is to make sure that the forms are done in a manner that, one, comply with the law, federal and state law, and two, are as easy as possible for voters to read. And I guess I think we could do it much simpler than this form, and if this is the official form, I really do think that the county's form was much easier to fill out, much easier to read, much easier to understand. And so I guess whether we do it in statute or in rule doesn't bother me in the least. I'd rather have it in rule than in statute. But I do think there should be some way that if counties can come together on a design that they feel is appropriate, that we should have the ability for counties to have two or three different choices as long as they meet those standards.
Mr. Black, you joined us at the table.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I think the issue is the question of forms that are not available statewide. I guess the two questions arise. One, will all counties accept each other's cards? I mean, I think that's important. If you get a card in Washington County, perhaps, but you live in Ramsey, can I send that Washington County card into Ramsey and make sure it's not, number one, not rejected because it's not their card, and number two, the question of the disparate results may have an impact on back end as a litigable issue. I think something I've picked up in my readings of the Bush versus Gore case. It's not just necessarily voting, but anything in the voting process that leads to a disparate result may be suspect. So in these cases, it may be safer to go with one statewide form or three statewide forms, which I think is certainly the NVRA form. It for Minnesota, that is a state, it's a federal form, it's nationwide. And so you wind up with uniform application across the entire state. And I think that's a recurring theme that we may see here today. And I think that's very important to avoid the questions that were raised in Bush versus Gore. And I think are still out there. There are a number of court cases that are out there that are pursuing these kinds of issues on a county-by-county case. And so that's the only concern I have is that if we have a multitude, and it's not so much necessarily the choice, because I think we're talking about, I think I heard Senator Martin say, or maybe somebody else say, three different choices, the NVRA, or maybe with Mr. Corbett, the NVRA, which is the federal form, the experimental form, which is allowed by rule, and whatever the statewide form that I think is intended by what Mr. Corbett was talking about. That's fine, because then you have three that are available across the state in a uniform pattern. If we get to a point of a checkerboard, that starts, I think, to get to be a problem. Okay.
Mr. Corbett, are there counties now that make their own cards other than just putting their address on the back?
Madam Chair, what had happened was that a group of counties got together and looked at the requirements under HAVA, under state rule and law, and created the card that Senator Marty had looked at. The intention was to present that to the Secretary of State's office and ask her to certify that as an experimental card for use by the counties. So I think there, as long as we get cooperation in that, if the counties develop a card to use. It gets certified by the Secretary of State as an experimental card that would be available for any county to use. If we believe that the form, the layout, everything else is superior to the one that's offered by the Secretary of State, a county could use that. But clearly the intent is not to have 87 different cards. We certainly agree with the limit on those issues. So as long as there's cooperation in approving experimental cards when the counties get together and develop something, that is, I think that's appropriate, and that's what I think the Senate language would allow for it, Mr. Watson.
Okay, that's this language, Mr. Watson. Let's get this distributed so people see what we're what Mr. Corbett is looking at. Just pass them down. Okay. We'll do it the easy way rather than the stuffy way. There should be some extras for folks in the audience as well to look at that. This is the A16 amendment. Mr. Watson, would you go through it with us, please?
Madam Chair. If you'll take a look on the side by side on page R7, on the Senate side, lines 8.2 to 8.7 is what Mr. Corbett was just talking about in the bill. And this amendment has just replaced the language you see in the side by side with the language you see on the amendment. Instead of referring to the county auditors providing the form, it just says that the form is as provided in the subdivision. We're keeping the same system of the Secretary of State providing example ballots and so forth as is now in the current state rules. Not changing that at all. Just changing the content of the application to include the 18-year-old and citizen information to conform with HABA and doing that instead. The rest of it would just be in accordance with the current rules.
Just so that I understand, so this has the effect of reinstating the stricken language on lines 8.2 through 8.4.
Could I ask Mr. Yukulku or Mr. Black to, would the Secretary of State be willing, I don't know if you've seen the forms that the counties have and are considering. I have no problem with there being some sort of approval process or something, and I just think, and I don't mean to offend if anybody who designed this is here, I just know I have trouble. I've tried to decipher forms where people put things in little boxes like this, and when I saw the form that they had, it was just put your name here in the line for your name, and number two, put your, I mean, everything that way was much simpler. I wasn't particularly fond of the federal form because they had a lot of other stuff that we didn't need to have on there. But is the Secretary of State, can they come in? Have you seen the form from the counties? Is that something you guys would be willing to approve if we had it, so you approve it? But I don't think we need two forms, how many forms? I just think we want it easier to read.
Mr. Kielkowski.
Madam Chair, Senator Marty, I looked at a form that was presented and they gave me a copy to take a look at. I take a look at this, I still think we need to have somebody that has oversight and certification of that card to make sure that it does do what it says it's doing. And somewhere along the line, we need to have somebody that's going to be to give the approval that this is okay to do, and that it meets the. Somebody's got to check over it to make sure that it's going to be doing that, and also to be HABA compliant. And I really firmly believe, I think if you read through a HABA, depending on how your state is organized, wherever the chief election official is of the state has the major responsibility for looking for HABA compliance. And so I think we would be amenable to that if we could. I think Mr. Black is working on some language here so that you have some kind of approval. Because that would also help, I would think, in regards to what Representative Lipman was talking about in terms of having a hodgepodge of 87 different cards out there that might cause some problems.
And Senator, just to follow up, in effect, looking at the form they had, while you can't tell for sure that it's HABA compliant until you look at it more closely, but if it was HABA compliant, you wouldn't have any problem proving the form like that. In other words, it's not like, because it's not reversed here or different typeface or something that, I mean, there'd be a some sort of commitment at the Secretary of State's office that form like that that they feel is easier to use, that you'd be willing to approve it as long as it's HABA compliant and so on, and that as far as you know the form they have, if it was HABA compliant, it's not something you have a problem with.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Marty, I looked at the form. I haven't analyzed it in terms of everything, but I mean, as I looked at the form, it was laid out there. The biggest thing is we need to have some kind of way to check over and have the approval come from our office.
Madam Chair, Mr. Kukulki, I understand that, and I'm happy to have that addressed in the Secretary of State's office. I just wanted to have a sort of a commitment that it's not going to be, well, we like the design of this one better than that, because to me, who's not an election official who has to deal with this, it looks like it's easier to fill out and to decipher. And I'm saying I'd be glad to make sure that provision is in there, that you're allowed to ratify it, as long as I have a commitment that you're basically saying, as far as we know, a form like this should be good.
Mr. Kukulski, and then Mr. Black, can we see what your suggestion for changes?
Madam Chair and Senator Marty, I think, if you take a look at the language that you have proposed on R7, it'd be very difficult for us to not approve something that's HABA compliant, that's following the statute, that we would say we're going to do it just because we're looking at the color issue or we're looking at the other issues. As long as I think it'd be very difficult for us to say if it's following all these things, the way that you have it written there, it would be, how could you not do it in that instance? Or you'd have to, because you have to back up your justification. Whenever we give an approval or a certification, you always have to back up that in terms of the evidence that you found. When we certify equipment or anything else, so everything has to be documented. We have to approach this, at least I'd have to approach this as the election official, documenting. If I was not going to approve, I'd have to say why and document why I'm not giving approval. And so since everything's spelled out here, it would have to kind of fall into this criteria somewhere. So I think we're safe in giving, as long as we have the approval to do that.
Mr. Black, do you have a suggestion?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would suggest on line 6, after the word subdivision, insert "and approved by the Secretary of State."
Mr. Black, you and Representative Hilty came up with exactly the same language.
Great minds do think alike.
Okay. Any discussion on that suggested addition? Comment from the counties?
Madam Chair, I don't think this changes anything from how we currently operate. I mean, clearly the NVRA card, the form provided by the Secretary of State, and if we want to use a different card, we go get it approved as experimental. And so, that seems to be the best solution to this. And I hope we get cooperation out of the Secretary of State's office to approve cards that are compliant, that are well-written, that are easily read, that look a lot like what Senator Marty is holding.
Senator Marty, would you move the A16 amendment as
amended? Madam Chair, I would, and tell Mr. Corbett that I heard Mr. Corbett give us that assurance that something like that would be approved as well.
Madam Chairman, as is tradition.
As is tradition. Okay. Tradition. Okay. Let's not start singing, Senator Higgins. All right. On the A16 amendment,
as amended.
All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Adopted. Yahoo. Okay. Section 7 seems to be different. Top of page R8.
Madam Chair.
Representative Hilton.
I think Mr. Shepherd raised the question of whether or not we had adopted this section that was just amended.
I can't hear you. I'm sorry. And
the question would be, have we adopted the section that we just amended?
Oh, yeah. Oh, that whole section. That was just a paragraph of that section. I see what you mean. Does the House have any objection to the Senate language, back to page R7, that inserted language, lines 714 to 8.1? I believe the
Madam Chair, if you're looking for the comparable provision in 1703, I had it a while ago.
Madam Chair, it's Article 5, Section 8.
Say it again, Mr. Black.
Article 5, Section 8 of 1703, if members want to confirm.
It'll be on page 73. Oh, page 73 of House File 1703.
Madam Chair, I would simply note for the House members that there is some additional language in the House which gives a version of 1703 which gives further instruction.
Right, the House language in 1703, pages 6, 7, 8, and 9, just list that they get the information that the voter is a citizen and at least 18 years old on election day. The Senate language says that the certification must include boxes for the voter to check, which I think is what the HAVA language probably is.
Right, and that, Madam Chair, that appears on page 7 of the House language 73 points, lines 6, 7, and 8.
1703, however, doesn't say that it has to be a box to check.
Right. That's correct, ma'am.
So I think the Senate language is more accurate, Mr. Black?
With respect to that issue, it is.
Okay. The other piece in 1703 that you have is lines 17, 18, and 19, asking for the voter's email address if provided by the voter, the voter's interest in serving as an election judge if indicated by the voter. And those are both options,
that
Mr.
is,
Black?
That is correct, Madam Chair.
Comments? So those are the two changes, or differences, more accurately.
Right.
And I think that Mr. Black has said that the Senate language on the check boxes is more accurate. And the other two provisions are optional. So, anybody have an opinion?
One of each. You get the box, and we get the options. Or?
The Senate box language is more accurate. The House language added the information about the email and interest in serving as an election judge, both of which are optional information. Representative Lippman's saying they'll take the boxes if we take the email and election judge.
It says it's optional, the boxes, or it says it's optional to have the... I mean, I don't care whether we have boxes or not have boxes.
HAVA cared as if we have boxes.
No.
Yeah.
I don't care. I was just talking about the email.
Are we okay accepting this?
You have a big problem other than the more things you have on the form. I think there are a lot better ways to recruit. There are a lot better ways to recruit election judges than this. And given the way most voters are deciding, they don't really want government to have more of their data than they need to. What would be the purpose of the email? I mean, I can picture lots of candidates in this field. It's wonderful, but I can picture a lot of voters who get a quick sense that we don't want that.
Mr. Black, what would you use the email for?
Well, actually, Madam Chair and Senator Marty, the email is actually used, as we've gone through the bill, you'll notice there are a number of contacts that need to be made by election administrators in the event of an incomplete or deficient registration, or perhaps just that can't read it, the indecipherable registration. And so telephones these days, you get a lot of answering machines, you get a lot of, they may or may not want to list their telephone number. Some people think it's more secure to list their email than their telephone number. That's a personal choice. But it's just becoming a way to contact individuals so that you could notify them, we can't read your information, or maybe you missed the box, you missed the address, we don't have your street number.
Senator Martin.
Mr. Black, perhaps I guess I don't have a irritation with providing email address, but Canada is taking that as well. As the election official who has to notify them, it is a cheaper way to do it. And serving as election judge, again, anything we can do to get more people, it just does add two lines to the form. I wonder if we put it in there that it could be in there, and then, frankly, if you find out you don't get any election judges out of it, you be able to pull it off instead of having to change the law. Same thing with the email thing, because I think it's a good idea to try them both, but I'm not sure we need to make it something that you have to do. So I wonder if instead of saying that, you know, if provided, email address optional, that we in effect tell the Secretary of State and the county auditors that that's an option that they can put on the form, because I presume you can't put it on right now.
It's on the.
How about allows you to? So well, we just decided we could put it on, and it's.
Madam Chair and Senator Marty, the Secretary of State does have existing authority to certify experimental forms of cards, and which is what we've done with the card you have before you, and so that is on there. We in consultation with. The revisor of statutes, it was indicated to us that did not need to be a rulemaking. Sometimes forms are interpreted as a rule. It's only a rulemaking if you're requiring the field to be filled out. That is an optional field, and so we were able to do an experimental card on that at this time.
Senator Martin?
Madam Chair, I like it that you're experimenting with it, and I don't have, when I said it's hard to fill out, I don't think that adds to, other than it's two more lines. And right now, if you do it this way, and then you find out a year from now, neither of you were much success, you could drop it, which I'd like you to have that flexibility to. Is there, do we have to change it, or is experimental, in effect, can be permanent experiment?
Mr. Brown.
Madam Chair, I was just thinking that we could possibly alleviate Senator Marty's concerns by inserting after the language on line 17 digits of Social Security number, semicolon, and then add M A include voter's email address, etc.
So
I think it'll get worse until you get to the voter signature, which I think is mandatory. So how about this? On line 18 before the semicolon and on line 19 before the semicolon, put parentheses, optional parentheses. Or you can put a new sentence on line 20 saying the email address and voter's interest in serving as an election judge are optional.
That's better.
Yeah, it's always it's often better to just make a new sentence. How about that?
Madam Chair, that sounds good. Representative Hilton wants to move that. We could accept it or move it.
Okay.
Anyway.
Representative Hilton, what's your pleasure?
I would be happy to move that.
Okay. All right. We have language that Mr. Watson can whip up for us really quickly, I suspect.
Madam Chair, I'm just going to suggest that on the side-by-side, if you look on the Senate language on line 7.11, and after the period, insert whatever our new sentence is going to say, and I think it would be something like the registration application may include the voter's email address if provided by the voter and the voter's interest in serving as an election judge if indicated by the voter.
So picking up the language that you had at 17.
And that would have a voter signature on 7.11?
Yes.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. And then we would... Okay. Madam Chair, would you like
that
again?
Yeah,
I just
want to
check with Mr. Black. Mr. Black,
okay with you? Madam Chair and Representative Boudreau, I think that will work. Right? Yeah, that will work.
Copies? Anybody have any thought other than that would work fine?
Madam Chair, our only concern is clearly this is more work for the counties and additional fields, and oftentimes it's very difficult to read the required fields and get them into the application system the right way. I would suggest that if a email address is unreadable, the counties probably will not be entering them in the system. We're not going to spend a whole lot of time trying to decipher email addresses.
That's why it's optional. It's optional.
Right, it's an optional to enter into the system.
Okay, I think we're all right. Okay, on Representative Hilty's motion to insert the sentence from line 7.11 after signature and the period, saying something along the lines of the registration application may include the voter's email address, comma, if provided by the voter, and the voter's interest in serving as an election judge, comma, if indicated by the voter. All in favor of that? Please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Adopted. Thank you. Okay. And then the House has, will the House agree to the box language in the Senate side lines 7.31 to 8.1?
Yes. You want to move it?
Would you move that?
I'll move that.
Representative Littman moves. Well, that would be all the Senate language then from 17.
I just thought it was asked for the box. As for the checkbox, or is it the I certified? forgive me. Mr. Black, do you have a view on 7.14 through 8.1?
Madam Chair and Representative Lippin, the language from 7.14 to 7.30 is the same as the House position 73.22 to 74.1. So I think that is acceptable.
Okay, I would move 7.14 to 7.30.
Yes, 8.1.
Well, 7.31 and to 8.1 is also in 1703?
It's not that way precisely, but this. It's approximately the same.
Better or worse, or
My own opinion is it's fine.
Okay, so you would urge upon the contrary is 7.14 through 8.1.
I'm sorry.
Forgive me. You would urge upon the contrary is 7.14 through 8.1. Position.
Madam Chair and Representative Lippman, that would certainly work.
Okay, then I'll make that motion.
Okay. Discussion on that motion? If not, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Adopted. Okay, and the balance of section, the Senate section 6, your section 9, it's the language on the top of R7. Current valid driver's license number, ID card. Oh, the Senate side has, no, you've got it too. Mr. Watson, what's the difference between those two? It's kind of where they're placed in the series.
Madam Chair, they look about the same to me.
Okay.
If somebody sees a difference, speak up.
Madam Chair, the only difference is the additional sentence in 11, 12, and 13 of the Senate language that introduces the certification.
Oh, yes. All right. So, Senator Marty, we move the Senate language.
Forgive me, Madam Chair, could Mr. Black highlight the difference again? Just so
the difference is that since the House... the 1006 language doesn't have the certification in it,
okay,
but the Senate does, and so we've got an additional sentence there that transitions into the certification.
Madam Chairman, Mr. Black, only because I'm lost, but can you tell me a page and line?
It's Senate, the Senate language, page 7.
On R7.
R7.
Yes.
Senate file language 7.11, 12, and 13 at the top.
I see.
Yep.
Senator Marty moves the Senate position. The Senate language from 6.34 to 7.13. Discussion?
Yeah.
Mr. Black, that's okay?
Madam Chair, that seems to fit with the rest of it, yes.
Okay. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Adopted. Yahoo. Okay, and then we did 8.2 to 8.7. Did we ever find matching language for the House for the paragraph on the bottom of R7, Senate Section 7?
Madam Chair, I believe I looked for something like that in 1703, and I couldn't find it. I don't know why the House doesn't have that.
Instructions. Representative
Hilty. Could I ask a question about the section that we just adopted?
Sure.
Mr. Black, I believe there are some questions. In the Harbor Bill about if you do not have a valid Minnesota driver's license or social security number, that a unique identification number will be assigned to you.
Yes, Madam Chair.
Would that be appropriate to include at this point?
Madam Chair, Representative Hilty, there is language in HAVA itself, which under 303A5, that provides that the state will assign a unique number. Actually, we assign unique numbers to voters already. So I'm not sure that you need to put that in this particular statute.
Okay.
Senator Linnett?
Thank you.
Mr. Black, could you repeat that question or that answer about unique identification number? The state will assign a unique identification number.
Madam Chair, Senator Lerman, yes, each voter has a voter identification number. It's not, it's only internal to the election system. In the case of a voter who had no driver's license or social security number and had never been issued one, that number, as I understand it, would be, let me just check with the technical people, would be used for the purposes of identifying the voter. Voters do need to be identified for purposes of reclassification when there's a redistricting or to track if you move from one county to another, things like that.
Mr. Black, is that an right? Internal number, or when somebody gets a copy of the database, do they get that number as well?
Madam Chair, that's a good question. I haven't looked at a voter list for a while now.
Is the number on it, or wouldn't
is the number on it? Madam Chair, staff advises me that yes, the unique number is on the public information list as currently.
The question I had is on the form, application form. This requires a four-digit Social Security number.
If no DM.
If there's no driver's
license. If there's no driver's license.
Or state.
How does, if a person does not have a driver's license or a Social Security number, what do they fill in, or do they, will the voter know of a number to write in somewhere, or because it's blank, you guys have to figure it out?
Madam Chair and Senator Limmer, if the voter does not actually have issued to them a driver's license, state ID card number, or SSN, then they would write none. Or they would leave it blank. If they write none, frankly, that's a little easier, I think, as an administrative matter, because then we could just go right to the unique identifier. If they leave it blank, I think that it is likely that the county auditor or other election administrator, in looking at the card, would be an occasion to contact the voter and say, by the way, you left this blank. Do you have one? And did you just forget? And we can write it in for you. And then they would go on to other things.
Just briefly, for a dramatic reading from Hava, if an applicant for voter registration for an election for federal office has not been issued a current and valid driver's license or a social security number, in the case that the Senator Miller brings up, the state shall assign the applicant a number which will serve to identify the applicant for voter registration purposes. To the extent that the state has a computerized list, in effect, under the subsection, and the list assigns a unique identifying number to registrants, the number assigned for this clause shall be a unique identifying number assigned under that list. So if they don't have a DL or put down a Social Security number, in addition to being contacted, the state will step in and, or is ordered to by the federal government to assign them a unique identifier.
Madam Chair, on this issue, if they have a driver's license but no Social Security number, are they also assigned the unique ID number?
But Senator Limmer, technically, the database, when you add a new entry to a database, there's always a number there. And so even if you would put the next voter as Linda Higgins, there's actually, it's probably just the next number in one of the fields. Mm-hmm. Then you go ahead and put your driver's license number as they're entering with all your data across for your uniqueness. But pretty much every database has the capability of just going to the next number in the sequence, and I'm assuming that that's what the Secretary of State's list will do, because it's what it does now.
Madam Chair,
Senator Limmer,
you know, at least those people in the Senate know that I have a very serious concern about the use and overuse of Social Security numbers, especially when it's used for identification purposes. Even four digits out of a nine-digit sequence is concern my part. If HAVA will allow a voter that doesn't have a Social Security number or a driver's license, it'll allow the state to produce a unique identification number. Does it also provide that if someone wants to refuse to give a Social Security number, could they have issued a unique identifier number?
Madam Chair and Senator Limmer, I think if somebody were only to list a driver's license number, that is certainly acceptable, and whatever administrative tasks are required would be done on the driver's license number. Only when they have no driver's license number do you go to the SSN. If somebody voluntarily refuses to list their SSN and leaves it blank, both driver's license and SSN blank, then I think they would be contacted by the election administrator to try and get something in that field, because the federal law is quite clear that you may not process a voter registration application if you don't have the DL or SSN of someone who has been issued a DL or SSN. If you're asking, would a unique identifier be issued for someone who clearly said, I have a DL and I have an SSN and I don't want to give either one of them to you, I think HAVA says no. On the other hand, I'm not certified by the Post Board. And so I don't have any enforcement authority to go out and track people like that down. Okay. I think their registration would either be deficient and not processed if they tell you that I have one, but I'm not going to tell you. Or it would be, well, I suppose it's possible it could be a felony, a violation of 201.
Well, which if they're permitted to vote, Madam Chair.
Yes. So I...
just to Senator Limmer's point, as I read HAVA, is that the only exception is if you have not been issued either a driver's license or a social security number. You know, that's the exception, that you get the unique identifier. So that if you have either of those, you must proffer one of them. I would suggest to you that the person who did not want to turn over at least four digits of their social security number for bona fide reasons, that you would advise that constituent to go and get a Minnesota identification card. They don't have to be a driver. It could just be in the system somehow. And the other more problematic point for the conferees is that is a federal requirement. We couldn't change it even if we wanted to. It may well be, Senator Limmer, that you can convince us on solid policy grounds that the last four digits is an improvident idea. But as to federal voters, it's not something as to which we can complain.
Madam Chair, the way I read, the way I'm understanding this conversation right now is that you had a driver's license and would not need to present the four digits of the Social Security number.
Mr. Black, is that correct?
That is correct, Senator.
And, yeah, I think it may be a little difficult to understand when you're reading the statute unless you give it very careful reading. All of the things, even on this card, if you don't read it exceptionally well, you're going to get people to fill out hopefully every line on this, including the Social Security last four digits, even though you have already put your driver license number. And for those people who have a concern about revealing a little bit more about their financial background or their medical information or anything else, they could unwittingly be presenting a little bit more key to the puzzle about it to get more information. Let me just give you a little idea of why I am sensitive to this. For the last 8 years, commercial entities have been asked for the last four digits of Social Security numbers on a variety of commercial accounts, cell phones, bank accounts, other business ventures. Usually Social Security numbers are only used for financial applications. There will come a time when someone in the very near future will say, you need the first five numbers of your Social Security number just for wink and nod identification purposes to identify you as a client of ours. But once that occurs, then the harvesters of information that are always accumulating data will simply accumulate from two different sources all of your Social Security numbers. Once they have that, then everything to your personal life is revealed. And I know you have provisions that you believe will protect the Social Security numbers you held in DPS, or the ones that you accumulate through the Secretary of State. But I've concluded in my study of data privacy is that every single database used for commercial purposes has a government base, a government foundation. So that's the easiest list to go and buy, and once you accumulate. We've been, in our judiciary committees, we've been stamping out these access points as fast as we can, but the technology is racing so fast ahead of us. That's why I'm concerned about it. If in fact, you don't need a driver's license, or if you have a driver's license, I would think that we could at least tell the Minnesota voters that you don't need to put it in a more specific, dramatic way. Do not fill out Social Security number on this card or any other means to collect that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It might give Senator Limmer some comfort to know that in the most recent House language you refer to any of these identifiers, there is language that says the public information list must not include any portion of any person's social security number, driver's license number, or Minnesota identification number. So while it would appear on the application, it would not appear on any public list.
Representative, I think we have that language somewhere as well. So that's pretty consistent along everybody. I think nobody wants those identifiers to get into the wrong hands. But we were talking in my office last night as we were going through this. My driver's license number in the state of Iowa was my social security number. My college ID was my social security number.
Really?
Uh-huh. You know, I'm old, so, you know, hopefully they haven't done that for many a year, but that's what they were. I really know that number well because I had to write it on everything.
Madam Chair.
Senator Limmer.
On a good 50 to 70% of all the major HMOs, they use your social security number as your medical ID number. And then they add a couple digits after it, so it becomes your social security number. But it too is used for every time you visit a needed medical emergency, every time you have to get physical care, you will wheel your social security number at all times.
Okay. Back to Section 7 of the Senate language. Did you ever find matching language from the House?
I have not yet, Madam Chair.
Okay. Susie?
Because isn't it, Madam Chair, isn't 817 in that language added in the same as the language 714 through 81 because it was, you were putting the new requirements in here, which I don't care if it's in here or in rule, but
does the House have any comment about the Senate Section 7 on the bottom of page R7? Would you like to adopt it? Would you like more information?
Mr. Black, Madam Chairman, Mr. Black, would it be your view that Section 7 is an unvarnished codification of the HAVA requirement?
Section 7 is totally consistent with the HAVA language that you had read earlier. I think that's fine.
All right. And members, it's probably the only person who ever made a living being a typesetter once a long time ago. I'd like to suggest a change on line 22, 8.22. There's a phrase there that's called with heavy letting. That's something that's a really obsolete phrase left over from the hot metal days. And people now kind of have an idea of what 16-point bold type is because of the computers that we all use. And I'll suggest that we say with 20-point letting. That gives 4 points of space in between lines that it airs it out so it's more readable. It's not the same effect as like double spacing, but it is spread out a little. So I would like to suggest getting that language into the 21st century. Page 8.22, the phrase.
Yeah.
It says 16-point bold type with heavy leading.
Right.
The phrase heavy leading is obsolete as of 20 years ago.
So you would delete those three words?
I would say with 20-point leading.
Strike
heavy, insert 20-point.
Okay. Do we still have 16-point bold type with 20-point leading?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Anybody have any objection to that?
Madam Chair, just in the computer age, would somebody using a desktop publishing program know what 20-point letting is?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. The other thing you could do is say space and a half, maybe. But if you actually sent this to a typesetter, the letting, and just so people know, 16-point letting is about
this size. This is probably 14, but it's, you know, it's nice big type.
Space and a half would be 24 point length.
Space and a half would be 16 plus 8, 24, yeah. So it's not quite space and a half.
So, Madam Chair, if you wanted to do that, you might say 24 point.
I could do that. Nobody much cares.
I don't care.
Move it, Senator Marty.
Senator, I'll move 24
points. Okay, Senator Marty moves deleting the word heavy on line 8.22 and inserting 24 points. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, adopt.
Okay. Madam Chair?
So then let's adopt all of Section 7. I think Senator Representative Lippman moved that. Mr. Black?
Oh, I just wanted to clarify that in the existing law part, when it says a registration application shall be accompanied by instructions, what that really means is they're printed on the back.
That's right. Makes sense. Okay. Okay. All in favor of adopting lines 8.8 to 8.25 of the Senate language? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Adopted. Okay. Moving right along. The House Section 10, Senate Section 8, on the page R8, there is looks to be about one difference, and it is the sentence on the Senate side, lines 9.1, 2, and 3. The sentence reads, failure to check a box on an application form that a voter has certified to be true does not cause the registration to be deficient. It's the issue of checking the box up here at the top of the card, and then that same information is down here where you sign your signature. And if you miss the box up here, we're suggesting that because you certify that those same two provisions down here, that not checking the box shouldn't make it deficient. Mr. Black, a comment?
Madam Chair, that has been the position of the Office of the Secretary of State, so
okay. That
is not an issue. There is, in the House section, line 10.11 and 10.12, I simply note that the House section is related to the next House section. And this has been, I will say, this has been superseded by the idea of the incomplete registration, which I think that concept actually does appear later in the Senate bill.
Okay. So adopting the Senate side would be okay, because as long as we deal with it later?
As long as we deal with it later.
All right, Senator Marty, do you have comments?
No, Madam Chair, I guess not.
All right.
Madam Chair, if I might.
Representative Milton, and then I'm sorry, but we've been called to a meeting, so we need to wander off.
My question was just, is what we're going to deal with later changing the language in reference to deficient to incomplete?
Mr. Black, I don't think that's what it does, but would you clarify?
Well, Madam Chair, that's the next section talks about deficient because not deficient because you've left something out or it's wrong, but deficient because you didn't provide the identification. One of the refinements we made in 1703 was to really make that clear and break that out into the incomplete. And I think that the Senate bill has picked up on that concept, because the word deficient, well, there are two problems. If you're deficient, you don't even appear on the roster. And if you're incomplete, you appear on the roster, and then you have to show the identification.
Mm-hmm.
Also, deficient has a chilling effect on voters, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just want to make sure we preserve what I think is an improvement, and I'm not sure how we proceed with that given the procedural posture we're in.
I know we have to go on a minute, but maybe Mr. Black could suggest what language, find the language that you think it should be in there somewhere. If it's in either of the two bills, it's fine. Otherwise, it's in 1703, and we should do our stuff.
Mr. Black?
Madam Chair, this might be something to work on during the break.
Yes.
It's a great idea.
Because the language on the House side, there's Section 11, the amendment to 201.071, adding a new subdivision 4A, I can't find it in 1703. I have looked both last night and now, and I don't find that language. So I wonder if it's been moved someplace or just redone, because in the new 1703, you have an amendment to subdivision 3, and then on page 75, and then you got an amendment to subdivision 9 on page 76, and I don't find this.
So, all right. So if you folks can work on
there,
that while we break.
One other thing, and I don't know if we're at the point where we can do that, but I do know we're also looking at time to be concerned. I wonder if there are things that there's a sense that Mr. Michael and Mr. Watson, if there are lots of things where there's just one or two word things that are not controversial things, if they could, I don't know if the committee feels that maybe they could just go and, hey, this one's same except for this, and whichever wording things they could. Sounds better on a neutral kind of basis. I don't know if a lot of those areas that are just that, if maybe they're all bigger substantive things than that. But,
maybe they can give us some advice on what those are.
I think we should try and find ways to speed up the process.
All right.
Okay. We're going to recess maybe a half hour, maybe a little longer, 45 minutes.
Four o'clock.
Let's say 4 o'clock. Let's just do that. Okay. We're in recess. Thank you.
When does the House come back in?
I think we're
going
in theory.
Thank you.
File 1006 will come to order. It's 5 minutes to 2 on Saturday, during the day. So we have before us the HABA provisions, the side-by-side that we were given last night. And I'll start wading through it, and I'm sure Mr. Watson will take over because he took better notes than I did. Sections 1 and 2 on the first and second pages were both passed in another bill last year, so we believe that we can delete those from this bill.
Section 1 and 2.
The House provisions, Sections 1 and 2, the voter integrity and voter access account, and the Help America Vote Act complaints, both of those were passed last year, so we can delete those from consideration today. Is that correct, Mr. Black?
Madam Chair and members, yes, they were passed in, I think it was Chapter 7 of the first special session last year.
Okay. So we will suggest that. Okay. On page R2, your Section 3, our Section 1, as best as we can tell, they are identical. So we would suggest adopting those two. Another body shows up. Are you agreeable to that?
Identical.
Okay, let's take the Senate position since they're identical. The 4 and our Section 3, this is statewide registration system. Shall we both agree that the proper terminology now is voter registration applications? I believe you did that in something. Yes, okay. So we'll just instruct the reviser, whoever puts this thing together. Is it the reviser? Is it?
Yeah.
Okay. That all places where the phrase registration forms or registration cards are used, we will use voter registration applications. All right, these two sections are a little bit different, and we can either set them aside for right now, or we can talk them through. But the sections that are different are On the Senate side, lines 3.5 and 6, and lines 3.10 through 3.17. So you'll come back to those right now? Hmm?
Madam Chair, if I may. Also in the House position, the last sentence there, 5.22 to 5.25, is also...
That's also different, yes.
And I have written here, ask for an explanation on this piece. On page R13, there seemed to be language that addressed this as well, and we were wondering whether it was necessary here with it being on R13. So we can, you guys can look at that and we'll come back. All right. Back on page R3, when we come back to that, if the counties can be prepared to talk to us about subprovision 11, lines 3.5 and 3.6, the provide access to municipal clerks to use the system to enter or modify absentee voting records, if they can give us some information on why they asked us to put that in there, we'd appreciate that. Oh, we have a quorum.
Good.
Senator Lemon is on his way. Great. The page R4, your subdivision 2 about rules and our subdivision 2 about rules are the same, except you have an effective date, which I believe is no longer necessary. Mr. Black, is that correct?
That is moved. That's correct.
Okay, so we would suggest deleting the effective date on the House side. Or take the Senate position. I forget that's how we do that. You okay there?
3.21 to 4.11?
Exactly, yes. So, Arthur, help me on the next one, would you please? Oh, this is a contested provision. This is the mail registration thing, and mail in person and mail in registration. So maybe we'll go beyond that. R6, Section 8 and R Section 5, is that what you were thinking, Representative Pittman?
It was, Madam Chair.
Okay. You have a couple provisions that we don't have. Lines 8.27, you added the phrase identity and, so say, an individual may prove identity and residence for purposes of registering by showing these things. You also put in pretty much every place a picture identification card as opposed to a valid identification card on our side, not saying picture identification. You did not put those in 1703, so is 1703 your more current wish then? So then we're suggesting take the Senate side, and that would make it the same. We use the language that conforms to what Hava uses, saying presenting a license rather than showing. Mr. Black or Representative Kluger?
Madam Chair, I'd like to hear from Mr. Black or Mr. Kielpuski before we...
Well,
Mr. Kielpuski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And members, the question that I have is that as we go down this list and we take a look at some of those issues that you were just bringing up, we did do some changes as we went in through 1703. But as I'm understanding, there's other provisions that are linked to that within the way that we developed those in 1703. So we may have, in essence, on a particular provision there, but it's linked to something that we're not even addressing within the confines of what we have before us, because they were also other things addressed in 1703. And I think one of the problems that we're facing today is that if we're going to strictly stick to this, we went through to redevelop and reintroduce and talk about some of the issues that were raised from our bill last year, and we did the changes within the committee structure coming through to the floor, that I have a problem sometimes in the sense that since we don't have 1703 as is in front of us, it's hard to just follow from here and then go back over and see how we handled it later within a different provision. And so that's kind of where I'm at right now, in the sense that I'd like to kind of take a look at how we go through this whole notion.
Can I hold this provision aside then to come back to later?
I would think so.
That's what I would suggest, Madam Chair, that we hold. If there's some question, that we could at least have some language to look at to do a comparison.
All right. The next section looks to be substantially different, at least more words. Madam Marty?
I think we would ask if we could like Taylor Tony's on this for clarification, because what this does is put the voter registration form or card or whatever it's called into statute, and I'm not sure. I think that may have been an interest to the counties, and I guess I wonder if we can hear from whoever that was.
Mr. Corbin, are you here? You are here.
Madam Chair, Kevin Corbin with Washington County. The stricken language on lines 8.2 through 8.4, I think what you're referring to, clearly the intent of that is the rules of the Secretary of State, as they read now, do not allow for the HABA compliance. And so by striking that, it says that a card to be used must meet the requirements set out in the section just above it. So the Secretary's office had moved the rule language into the statutes, and this says then that any card needs to conform to this subdivision rather than to the rule.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I'm completed.
Okay. Madam Chairman, Mr. Corbett, my concern here is as to unintended consequences. I'm concerned that if we don't have a centralized author of voter registration applications, and so admiring of the Secretary's work, I always carry one with me, that if it's not a single unitary source as to what is on the VR card, and indeed these matters are in statute such that they would suggest that we could have 87 possible permutations of this document, or perhaps even more if we drill down to the beyond the county level to the district clerk level, or even any non-governmental organization developing their own voter registration card, provided that the requirements of the statute were, in a sense, complied with, we could have very different formats and forms. And while not trying to be a stickler as to uniformity just for the sake of uniformity, I'm concerned that, let us say, bringing in the deficient registration issue, what if one format used had very tiny boxes for the putting in of the driver's license number such that it was less legible than perhaps other formulations by the Secretary of State or in other counties, such that you had disparate results? Because if the driver's license registration as a HABA requirement is less legible, presumably one could have more deficient registrations and more folks obliged to proffer identification at the polling place, and clearly both House members and Senate members are committed to try and avoid that in as many cases as we can. So I'm concerned that a wide open set of authors as to the VR card leads to, or at least the potentiality of, disparate results of people being bounced from mail-in registration or early registration, pre-registration, such that they have to proffer additional documentation, which might be a barrier for them being actually able to vote on election day. Why are my concerns as to multiple authors either not well placed as to this language or not well taken generally?
Madam Chair, Representative Lippman, the intent was not to have 87 different cards, and I believe the Senate Council has worked on some language here that would, I think, deal with your concerns, so that it would be basically the card prepared by the Secretary of State, any card that is agreed to as an experimental card, and the NVRA cards would be the options for the counties to use. So I think
that they have prepared some language that you might want to look at that is acceptable to the counties.
Representative, and I have a question. Why would it open up, why would having the language in statute as opposed to in rule open up your envisioning 87 different cards?
Madam Chairman, members, I'm concerned that that the statutory language is, in a sense, a recitation of the ideas that are in the rules, but there isn't a format set forth. I believe the Rule 8200, I mean, it, in a sense, although it's done in text, lays out almost a design of the voter registration card and how it looks. And it really does set some fairly tight parameters. All of those ideas are codified in statute, I mean, as to the requirements. But if you don't have the, in a sense, the look and feel tightly spelled out as they are in rules, then I think you open it up to multiple authors being able to comply. And in a sense, my concern of that is not that there's a pride in authorship thing, but that there might be disparate results because you know, some forms may well be better than others.
Madam Chair, I don't feel any reason to have it in statute as opposed to rule. I recognize the rule has to be updated to have the yes and no boxes on. I do think, Representative Whitman, I think this is an awful card to try and read and try and fill out, and worse, to try and... I've never figured out why so many people who take forms, and I know my political party for its caucus and kind of thing, they have some little boxes for each little letter. People don't all write their names. I usually write without little boxes around each letter. And it's extremely hard to get that off. Also, reverse type, I mean, people, we had a discussion in the Senate committee last week about the fact how many people miss this little box, yes or no, because they don't see the numbers because the numbers are reversed out and you look at the form. I would say this form doesn't look ugly, but it certainly is very hard to fill out and very hard to read for a lot of people. And I guess my point is I saw a form that I believe the counties had prepared a form. The first one they had, I didn't think complied with HAVA. They showed me that they have one that they feel does comply with HAVA, and I thought it was much easier to fill out. And it seemed to me if we have one or two different forms, let the counties choose which way they go is fine. I think the urgent thing is to make sure that the forms are done in a manner that, one, comply with the law, federal and state law, and two, are as easy as possible for voters to read. And I guess I think we could do it much simpler than this form, and if this is the official form, I really do think that the county's form was much easier to fill out, much easier to read, much easier to understand. And so I guess whether we do it in statute or in rule doesn't bother me in the least. I'd rather have it in rule than in statute. But I do think there should be some way that if counties can come together on a design that they feel is appropriate, that we should have the ability for counties to have two or three different choices as long as they meet those standards.
Mr. Black, you joined us at the table.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I think the issue is the question of forms that are not available statewide. I guess the two questions arise. One, will all counties accept each other's cards? I mean, I think that's important. If you get a card in Washington County, perhaps, but you live in Ramsey, well, can I send that Washington County card into Ramsey and make sure it's not, number one, not rejected because it's not their card, and number two, the question of the disparate results may have an impact on the back end as a litigable issue. I think, something I picked up in my readings of the Bush versus Gore case. It's not just necessarily voting, but anything in the voting process that leads to a disparate result may be suspect. So in these cases, it may be safer to go with one statewide form or three statewide forms, which I think is certainly the NVRA form for Minnesota.
that is a state, it's a federal form, it's nationwide. And so you wind up with uniform application across the entire state. I think that's a recurring theme that we may see here today. And I think that's very important to avoid the questions that were raised in Bush versus Gore, and I think are still out there. There are a number of court cases that are out there that are pursuing these kinds of issues on a county-by-county case. And so that's the only concern I have is that if we have a multitude, and it's not so much necessarily the choice, because I think we're talking about, I think I heard Senator Morgan say, or maybe somebody else say, three different choices, the NVRA, or maybe Mr. Corbett, the NVRA, which is the federal form, the experimental form, which is allowed by rule, and whatever the statewide form that I think is intended by what Mr. Corbett was talking about. That's fine, because then you have three that are available across the state in a uniform pattern. If we get to a point of a checkerboard, that starts, I think, to get to be a problem.
Mr. Corbett, are there counties now that make their own cards other than just putting your address on the back?
Madam Chair, what had happened was is that a group of counties got together and looked at the requirements under HAVA under state rule and law and created what the card that Senator Marty had looked at. The intention was to present that to the Secretary of State's office and ask her to certify that as an experimental card for use by the counties. So I think there, you know, as long as we get cooperation in that, if the counties develop a card to use, it gets certified by the Secretary of State as an experimental card, that would be available for any county to use. If we believe that the form, the layout, you know, everything else is, you know, superior to the one that's offered by the Secretary of State, a county could use that. But clearly the intent is not to have 87 different cards. We certainly have been looking on those issues. So as long as there's cooperation in approving experimental cards when counties get together and develop something, that is, I think that's appropriate, and that's what I think the Senate language would allow for, Mr. Watson.
Okay, that's this language, Mr. Watson. Let's get this distributed so people see what was talked, what Mr. Watson was talking about. Just pass them down. Okay. We'll do it the easy way rather than the stuffy way. There should be some extras for folks in the audience as well. This is the A16 amendment. Mr. Watson, would you go through it with us, please?
Madam Chair, if you'll take a look on the side by side on page R7, on the Senate side, lines 8.2 to 8.7 is what Senator Corbett has been talking about in the bill. And this amendment would just replace the language you see in the side by side with the language you see on the amendment. Instead of referring to the county auditors providing the form, it just says that the form is as provided in the subdivision. We're keeping the same system of the Secretary of State providing example ballots and so forth as is now in the current state rules. Not changing that at all. Just changing the content of the application to include the 18-year-old and citizen information to conform with how and do that instead. The rest of it will just be in accord with the question.
Just so that I understand, so this has the effect of reinstating the stricken language on lines 8.2 through 8.4.
Could I ask Mr. Schuchel or Mr. Black to, would the Secretary of State be willing, I don't know if you've seen the forms that the counties have and are considering, and I have no problem with there being some sort of approval process or something, and I just think, and I don't mean to offend if anybody who designed this is here, I just know I have trouble. I've tried to decipher forms where people put things in little boxes like this, and when I saw the form that they had, it was just put your name here in the line for your name, and number two, put your, everything that way. It was much simpler. I wasn't particularly fond of the other stuff that we really need to have on there. But is the Secretary of State, can they come in? Have you seen the form from the colonies? Is that something you guys would be willing to approve if we had it, so you approve it? But I don't think we need two forms, how many forms? I just think really one is easier to read.
Mr. Kielkowski.
Madam Chair, Senator Marty. I looked at a form that was presented, and they gave me a copy to take a look at. I think, as I take a look at this, I still think we need to have somebody that has oversight and certification of that card to make sure that it does do what it says it's doing. And somewhere along the line, we need to have somebody that's going to be to give the approval that this is okay to do, and that it needs to, somebody's got to check over it to make sure that it's going to be doing that. And also to be HAVA compliant. And I really firmly believe, I think if you read through a HAVA, depending on how your state is organized, wherever the chief election official is of the state, it has the major responsibility for looking for HAVA compliance. And so I think we would be amenable to that if we could. I think Mr. Black is working on some language here so that you have some kind of approval. Because that would also help, I would think, in regards to what Representative Lipton was talking about in terms of having a hodgepodge of 87 different cards out there that might cause some problems.
And Senator Martin, Madam Chair, just to follow up, in effect, looking at the form they had, while you can't tell for sure that it's HAVA compliant until you look at it more closely, but if it was HAVA compliant, you wouldn't have any problem proving the form like that. In other words, it's not like, because it's not reversed here or different typeface or something that, there'd be there's some sort of commitment Secretary of State's office that form like that they feel is easier to use, that you'd be willing to prove it as long as it's HAVA compliant and so on. And that as far as you know the form they have, if it was HAVA compliant, it's not to be a problem with.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Marty, I looked at the form. I haven't analyzed it in terms of everything, but I mean, as I look at the form that was laid out there, the biggest thing is we need to have some kind of way to check over and have the approval come from our office.
Madam Chair, Mr. Kielkowski, I understand that, and I'm happy to have that addressed in the Secretary of State's office. I just wanted to have a sort of a commitment that it's not going to be, we like the design of this one better than that. To me, who's not an election official who has to deal with this, it looks like it's easier to fill out cans and decipher. And I'm saying I'd be glad to make sure that provision is in there that you're allowed to ratify it, as long as I have a commitment that you're basically saying, as far as we know, a form like this should be good.
Mr. Kielkowski? And then Mr. Black, can you see what your suggestion for changes?
Madam Chair and Senator Marty, I think, if you take a look at the language that you have proposed on R7, it'd be very difficult for us to not approve something that's HAVA compliant, that's following the statute, that we would say we're going to do it just because we're looking at the color issue or we're looking at the other issues. As long as I think it'd be very difficult for us to say if it's following all these things, the way that you have it written there, it would be, how could you not do it? In that instance, or you'd have to, because you have to back up your justification. Whenever we are given approval or a certification, you always have to back up that in terms of the evidence that you found. When we certify equipment or anything else, so everything has to be documented. We have to approach this, at least I'd have to approach this as the election official, documenting. If I was not going to approve, I'd have to say why and document why I'm not giving approval. And so since everything's spelled out here, it would have kind of fall into this criteria somewhere. So I think we're safe in giving, as long as we have the approval to do that.
Mr. Black, do you have a suggestion?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would suggest on line 6, after the word subdivision, insert "and approved by the Secretary of State."
Mr. Black, you and Representative Hilty came up with exactly the same language.
Great minds do think alike.
Any discussion on that suggested addition? Comment from the counties?
Madam Chair, I don't think this changes anything from how we currently operate. I mean, clearly the NVRA card, the form provided by the Secretary of State, and if we want to use a different card, we go get it approved as experimental. And so
know, that seems to be the best solution to this. And I hope we get cooperation on the Secretary of State's office to approve cards that are compliant, that are well written, that are easily read, that look a lot like what Senator Marty is holding.
Senator Marty, would you move the A16 amendment as
amended? Madam Chair, I would, and tell Mr. Corbett that I heard Mr. Corbett give us that assurance that something like that would be approved as well.
Madam Chairman, as is tradition.
As is tradition. Okay. Robinson? Okay. Let's not start singing, Senator Hayden. All right. On the A16 amendment, as amended. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Adopted. Yahoo. Okay. Section 7 seems to be different. Top of page R8.
Madam Chair.
Representative Hilton.
Thank you. Mr. Shepherd raised the question of whether or not we had adopted this section that was just amended.
I can't hear you. I'm sorry. And
the question would be, have we adopted the section that we just amended?
Oh, you're right. Oh, that whole section. That was just a paragraph of that section. I see what you mean. Does the House have any objection to the Senate language, back to page R7, that inserted language? Line 714 to 8.1. I believe the.
Madam Chair, if you're looking for the comparable provision in 1703, I had it a while ago.
Madam Chair, it's Article 5, Section 8.
Say again, Ms. Black.
Article 5, Section 8.
1703 members. It'll be on page 73. Oh, page 73 of House File 1703.
Chair, I would simply note for the House members that there is some additional language in the House which gives a version of 1703 which gives further instruction.
Okay, the House language in 1703, pages 6, 7, 8, and 9, just list that they get the information that the voter is a citizen and at least 18 years old on election day. The Senate language says that the certification must include boxes for the voter to check, which I think is what the HAVA language probably is.
Right, and that, Madam Chair, that appears on page 7 of the House language 73 points, lines 6, 7, and 8.
1703, however, doesn't say that it has to be a box to check.
That's correct, right.
So I think the Senate language is more accurate, Mr. Black?
With respect to that issue, it is.
Okay. The other piece in 1703 that you have is lines 17, 18, and 19, asking for the voter's email address if provided by the voter, the voter's interest in serving as an election judge if indicated by the voter. And those are both options, Mr. Black?
That is correct, Madam Chair.
Comments? So those are the two changes. difference is more accurate.
Right.
And I think that Mr. Black has said that the Senate language on the check boxes is more accurate. And the other two provisions are optional. So, anybody have an opinion?
One of each. You get the box and we get the option.
The Senate box language is more accurate. The House language added the information about the email and interest in serving as an election judge, both of which are optional information. Representative Lippman's saying they'll take the boxes if we take the email and election judge.
It says it's optional, the boxes, or it says it's optional to have the... And I don't care whether we have boxes or not have boxes.
Hava cared if we have boxes.
Oh. Okay.
Are we okay accepting this?
You have a big problem other than the more things you have on the form. I think there are a lot better ways to recruit, election judges than this. And given the way most voters are deciding, they don't really want government to have more of their data than they need to. What would be the purpose of the email? I mean, I can picture lots of candidates in this field, it's wonderful, but I can picture a lot of voters who get a quick sense of real life.
Mr. Black, what would you use the email for?
Well, actually, Madam Chair and Senator Marty, the email is actually used, as we've gone through the bill, you'll notice there are a number of contacts that need to be made by election administrators in the event of an incomplete or deficient registration, or perhaps just that can't read it, the indecipherable registration. And so telephones these days, you get a lot of answering machines, you get a lot of, they may or may not want to list their telephone number. Some people think it's more secure to list their email than their telephone number. That's a personal choice. But it's just becoming a way to contact individuals so that you can notify them, we can't read your information, or maybe you missed the box, you missed the address, we don't have your street number.
Mr. Black, perhaps I guess I don't have an irritation with providing email address. And serving as election judge, again, anything we can do to get more people, it just does add two lines to the form. I wonder if we put it in there that it could be in there, and then, frankly, if you find out you don't get any election judges out of it, you be able to pull it off instead of having to change the law. Same thing with the email thing, because I think it's a good idea to try them both, but I'm not sure we need to make it something that you have to do. So I wonder if instead of saying that, you know, if provided, email address optional, that we in effect tell the Secretary of State and County Auditors that that's an option that they can put on the form, because I presume you can't put it on right now.
It's on the
form. How about allows you to, so
well,
we just decided we could put it on and it's...
Well, Madam Chair and Senator Marty, the Secretary of State does have existing authority to certify experimental forms of cards, and which is what we've done with the card you have before you, and so that is on there. We, in consultation with the revisor of statutes, it was indicated to us that did not need to be a rulemaking. Sometimes forms are interpreted as a rule. It's only a rulemaking if you're requiring the field to be filled out. That is an optional field, and so we were able to do an experimental card on that at this time.
Yes, Senator Martin.
You know, Chair, I like it that you're experimenting with it, and I don't have a nice card hard to fill out. I don't think that adds to, other than it's two more lines. And right now, if you do it this way, and then you find out a year from now neither of them were much success, you could drop it. Which I'd like for you to have that flexibility to. Is there, do we have to change it, or is experimental in effect to be permanent experiment?
Mr. Black.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Senator Perkins.
Madam Chair, I was just thinking that we could possibly alleviate Senator Marty's concerns by inserting after the language on line 17, digits of Social Security number, semicolon, and then add and may include Lori's email address, etc.
I think that works until you get to the voter signature, which I think is mandatory. So, how about this? On line 18 before the semicolon and on line 19 before the semicolon, put parentheses, optional parentheses. Or you can put a new sentence on line 20 saying, the email address and voter's interest in serving as an election judge are optional. Yeah, it's always it's often better to just make a new sentence. How about that?
Madam Chair, that sounds good. Representative Hilton wants to move that. We should accept it or we'll move it.
Okay.
Anyway,
Representative Hilton, that's your pleasure.
I would be happy to move that.
Okay. All right. We have language that Mr. Watson can whip up for us really quickly, I suspect.
Chair, I'm just going to suggest that on the side-by-side, if you look on the Senate language on line 7.11, after the period, insert whatever our new sentence is going to say. And I think it would be something like the registration application may include the voter's email address if provided by the voter and the voter's interest in serving as an election judge if indicated by the voter.
So picking up the language that you had in 17.
And that would have a voter signature on 7.11?
Yes.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. And then we... Mr. Black, okay with you?
Madam Chair and Representative Boudreau, I think that will work. Yeah, that will.
Counties, anybody have any thought other than that would work fine?
Madam Chair, our only concern is cleanliness is more work for the counties on additional fields, and oftentimes it's very difficult to read the required fields and get them into the application system the right way. I would suggest that if an email address is unreadable, the counties probably will not be entering them in the system. We don't have to spend a whole lot of time trying to decipher email addresses.
I think it's optional. It's optional.
Right, and optionally entered in the system.
Okay, I think we're all right. Okay, on Representative Hilty's motion to insert the sentence on line 7.11 after signature and the period, saying something along the lines of the registration application may include the voter's email address, comma, if provided by the voter, and the voter's interest in serving as an election judge, comma, if indicated by the voter. All in favor of that? Please say aye.
Uh-huh.
Aye. Opposed? Adopted. Thank you. Okay. And then the House has, will the House agree to the box language in the Senate side lines 7.31 to 8.1?
Would you move that? I'll move that.
Representative Whitman moves. Well, that would be all the Senate language then on from 17.
I just thought it was asked for the box. As to the checkbox, or is it the I certified? Forgive me. Mr. Black, you have a view on 7.14 through 8.1?
Madam Chair and Representative Lippin, the language from 7.14 to 7.30 is the same as the House position 73.22 to 74.1. So I think that is acceptable.
Okay, I would move 7.14 to 7.30.
Yes, 8.1.
Well, 7.31 and to 8.1 is also a 1703?
It's not that way precisely, but it's approximately the same.
Better or worse, or?
opinion is it's fine.
Okay, so you would urge upon the conferees 7.14 through 8.1.
I'm sorry?
Forgive me. You would urge upon the conferees 7.14 through 8.1 of the Senate position.
Madam Chair and Representative Lippman, that would certainly work.
Okay, then I'll make that motion.
Okay. Discussion on that motion? Not all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Adopted. Okay, and the balance of section, the Senate section 6, your section 9, it's the language on the top of R7. Current valid driver's license number, oh, the Senate side has, no, you've got it too. Mr. Waxman, what's the difference between those two? Where they're placed in the series?
Madam Chair, they look about the same to me.
Okay.
Somebody sees a difference, speak up.
Madam Chair, the only difference is the additional sentence in 11, 12, and 13 of the Senate language that introduces the certification.
Oh, yes. All right. So Senator Marty would move the Senate language.
Forgive me, Madam Chair, could Ms. Black highlight the difference again? Just so
The difference is that since the House, the 1006 language doesn't have the certification in it,
okay,
but the Senate does, and so we've got an additional sentence there that transitions into the certification.
Member Chairman, Ms. Black, only because I'm lost, but can you tell me page and line?
It's the Senate language, page 7.
R7.
R7.
Yes.
The Senate file language 7.11, 12, and 13 at the top.
I see.
Yep.
Senator Marty moves the Senate position. The Senate language from 6.34 to 7.13. Discussion?
You heard that?
That's okay?
Madam Chair, that seems to fit with the rest of it, yes.
Okay. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Adopted. Yahoo. Okay, and then we did 8.2 to 8.7. Did we ever find matching language for the House for the paragraph on the bottom of R7, Senate Section 7?
Madam Chair, I believe I looked for something like that at 1703, and I couldn't find it. I don't know why it doesn't have that.
Instructions.
Could I ask a question about this section that we just adopted? Mr. Black, I believe there was some question about in the HAVA bill about if you do not have a valid Minnesota driver's license or social security number, that the unique identification number would be assigned to you.
Yes, Madam Chair.
Would that be appropriate to include at this point?
Madam Chair and Representative Helpy, there is language in HAVA itself, which under 303A5, that provides that the state will assign a unique number. Actually, we assign unique numbers to voters already. So I'm not sure that you need to put that in this particular statute.
Okay.
Senator Lynn?
Thank you.
Mr. Black, could you repeat that question or that answer?
Okay.
Madam Chair, Senator Lieberman, yes, each voter has a voter identification number. It's not, it's only internal to the election system. In the case of a voter who had no driver's license or social security number and had never been issued one, that number, as I understand it, would be, let me just check with the technical people, would be used for the purposes of identifying the voter. Voters do need to be identified for purposes of a reclassification when there's a redistricting or to track if you move from one county to another, things like that.
Mr. Black, is that an right? Internal number, or when somebody gets a copy of the database, do they get that number as well?
Madam Chair, that's a good question. I haven't looked at a voter list for a while now.
Is the number on the
roster?
Madam Chair, staff advises me that yes, the unique number is on the public information list as currently.
The question I had is on the form, application form. This requires a four-digit Social Security number.
If no DM.
If there's no driver's license.
If there's no driver's license.
Or state.
How does, if a person does not have a driver's license or a Social Security number, what do they fill in, or do they, will the voter know of the number to write in somewhere, or because it's blank, you guys have to figure it out?
Madam Chair and Senator Limmer, if the voter does not actually have issued to them a driver's license, state ID card number, or SSN, then they would write none, or they would leave it blank. If they write none, frankly, that's a little easier, I think, as an administrative matter, because then we can just go right to the unique identifier. If they leave it blank, I think that it is likely that the county auditor or other election administrator, in looking at the card, would be an occasion to contact the voter and say, by the way, you left this blank, do you have one, and did you just forget, and we can write it in for you, and then they would go on to other things.
Just briefly, for a dramatic reading from HAVA, if an applicant for voter registration for an election for federal office has not been issued a current and valid driver's license, or a social security number, in the case that Senator Miller brings up, the state shall assign the applicant a number which will serve to identify the applicant for voter registration purposes. To the extent that the state has a computerized list in effect under this subsection, and the list assigns a unique identifying number to registrants, the number assigned for this clause shall be a unique identifying number assigned under that list. So if they don't have a DL or put down a social security number, in addition to being contacted, the state will step in and, or is ordered to by the federal government to assign them a unique identifier.
Chair, in this figure, if they have a driver's license but no social security number, are they also assigned the unique ID number?
But Senator Limmer, technically, the database, when you add a new entry to a database, there's always a number there. And so even if you would put the next voter as Linda Higgins, there's actually, it's probably just the next number in one of the fields. Mm-hmm. Then you'd go ahead and put your driver's license number as their entry with all your data across for your uniqueness. But pretty much every database has the capability of just going to the next number in the sequence, and I'm assuming that that's what the Secretary of State's list will do, because it's what it does now.
Madam Chair,
Senator Lim,
you know, at least those people in the Senate know that I have a very serious concern about the use and overuse of Social Security numbers, especially when it's used for identification purposes. Even four digits out of a nine-digit sequence is if HAVA will allow a voter that doesn't have a social security number or a driver's license, it'll allow the state to produce a unique identification number does it also provide that if someone wants to refuse to give a Social Security number, could they have issued a unique identifier number?
Just one.
Madam Chair and Senator Limmer, I think if somebody were only to list a driver's license number, that is certainly acceptable, and whatever administrative tasks are required would be done on the driver's license number. Only when they have no driver's license number do you go to the SSM. If somebody voluntarily refuses to list their SSN and leaves it blank, both driver's license and SSN blank, then I think they would be contacted by the election administrator to try and get something in that field, because the federal law is quite clear that you may not process a voter registration application if you don't have the DL or SSN of someone who has been issued a DL or SSN. If you're asking would a unique identifier be issued for someone who clearly said, I have a DL and I have an SSN and I don't want to give either one of them to you, I think HAVA says no. On the other hand, I'm not certified by the Post Board, and so I mean I don't have any enforcement authority to go out and track people like that down. I think their registration would either be deficient and not processed if they tell you that I have one but I'm not going to tell you, or it would be I suppose it's possible it could be a felony, a violation of 201,
well,
which is a felony.
Well, it's permitted to vote, Madam Chair.
Yes.
Just to Senator Limmer's point, as I read HAVA, is that the only exception is if you have not been issued either a driver's license or a Social Security number. You know, that's the exception, that you get the unique identifier. So that if you have either of those, you must proffer one of them. I would suggest to you that the person who did not want to turn over their at least four digits of their Social Security number for bona fide reasons, that you would advise that constituent to go and get a Minnesota identification card. You don't have to be a driver. It could just be in the system somehow. And the other more problematic point for the conferees is that is a federal requirement. We couldn't change it even if we wanted to. It may well be, Senator Limmer, that you can convince us on solid policy grounds that the last four digits is an improvident idea. But as to federal voters, it's not something as to which we can complain.
Madam Chair, the way I read, the way I'm understanding this conversation right now is that if you had a driver's license, you would not need to present the four digits of Social Security.
Mr. Black, is that correct?
That is correct, Senator.
And yet I think it may be a little difficult to understand when you're reading the statute unless you take a very careful read on it. All of the things, even on this card, if you don't read it exceptionally well, you're going to get people to fill out hopefully every line on this, including the Social Security last four digits, even though you have already put your driver license number. And for those people who have a concern about revealing a little bit more about their financial background or their medical information or anything else, they could unwittingly be presenting a little bit more key to the puzzle about it getting more information. Let me just give you a little idea of why I am sensitive to this. For the last 8 years, commercial entities have been asked for the last four digits of Social Security numbers on a variety of commercial accounts, cell phones, bank accounts, other business ventures. Usually Social Security numbers are only used for financial applications.
there will come a time when someone in the very near future will say, you need the first five numbers of your Social Security number just for wink and nod identification purposes to identify you as a client of ours. But once that occurs, then the harvesters of information that are always accumulating data will simply accumulate from two different sources all of your Social Security numbers. Once they have that, then everything to your personal life is revealed. And I know you have provisions that you believe will protect the Social Security numbers you've held in GPS, or the ones that you accumulate for this through the Secretary of State. But I've concluded in my study of data privacy is that every single database used for commercial purposes has a government base, a government foundation. So that's the easiest list to go and buy, and once you accumulate. Even in our judiciary committees, we've been stamping out these access points as fast as we can, but the technology is racing so fast ahead of us, we can't get. That's why I'm concerned about this. If in fact, you don't need a driver's license, or if you have a driver's license, I would think that we could at least tell the Minnesota voters that you don't need to put it in a more specific, dramatic way. Do not fill out Social Security number on this card or any other means like that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It might give Senator Loomer some comfort to know that in the most recent House language you referring to any of these identifiers, there is language that says the public information list must not include any portion of any person's Social Security number, driver's license number, or Minnesota identification number. So while it would appear on the application, it would not appear on any public list.
Representative, I think we have that language somewhere as well. So that's pretty consistent along everybody. I think nobody wants those identifiers to get into the wrong hands. But we were talking in my office last night as we were going through this. My driver's license number in the state of Iowa was my Social Security number. My college ID was my Social Security number.
Really?
Uh-huh. I'm old, so hopefully they haven't done that for many a year, but that's what they were. I really know that number well because I had to write it on everything. Senator Limmer.
A good 50-70% of all the major HMOs will use your Social Security number as your medical ID number. And then they add a couple digits after so it gets delivered on your Social Security number. But it too is used for every time you visit a needed medical emergency, every time you have to get physical care, you're revealing your Social Security number also.
Okay. Back to Section 7 of the Senate language, did you ever find matching language from the House?
I have not yet, Madam Chair.
Okay. Should we? Mm-hmm.
Because isn't the 17 in that language added in the same as the language 714 through 81 because it was put in the new requirement in here, which I don't care if it's in here or in rule, but wasn't it just there as part of the other thing? Oh, well, they didn't put the other stuff in the certification either, did they? Or did they put that? Oh.
All right. Does the House have any comment about the Senate Section 7 on the bottom of page R7? Would you like to adopt it? Would you like more information?
Mr. Black, Madam Chairman, Mr. Black, would it be your view that Section 7 is an unvarnished codification of the HAVA requirement?
Section 7 is
Section 7 is totally consistent with the HAVA language that you had read earlier. I think that's.
All right. And members, it's probably the only person who ever made a living being a typesetter once a long time ago. I'd like to suggest a change on line 22, 8.22. There's a phrase there that's called with heavy letting. That's something that's a really obsolete phrase left over from the hot metal days. And people now kind of have an idea of what 16-point bold type is because of the computers that we all use. And I think I'll suggest that we say with 20-point letting. That gives 4 points of space in between lines that it airs it out so it's more readable. It's not the same effect as like double spacing, but it is spread out a little. So I would like to suggest getting that language into the 21st century. Page 8.22, the phrase. Yeah. It says 16-point bold type with heavy leading.
Right.
The phrase heavy leading is obsolete as of 20 years ago.
So you would delete those three words?
I would say with 20-point leading.
Strike
heavy, insert 20-point.
Okay, do we still have 16-point bold type with 20-point leading?
Yeah.
Okay.
Anybody have any objection to that?
Madam Chair, just in the computer age, would somebody using a desktop publishing program know what 20-point letting is?
Yes. Okay. Yes. The other thing you could do is say space and a half, maybe. But if you actually sent this to a typesetter, the letting, and just so people know, 16-point letting is about this size. This is probably 14, but it's nice big type.
Space and a half would be 24-point letting.
Space and a half would be 16 plus 8, 24, yeah. So it's not quite space and a half.
So, Madam Chair, if you wanted to do that, you might say 24-point.
I could do that. Nobody much cares.
I don't care.
Move it, Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, I'll move
24 points. Okay, Senator Marty moves deleting the word heavy on line 8.22 and inserting 24 points. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Aye. Adopt.
Okay. Madam Chair?
So then let's adopt all of Section 7. I think Senator Representative Lippman moved that. Mr. Black?
Oh, I just wanted to clarify that in the existing law part, when it says a registration application shall be accompanied by instructions, what that really means is they're printed on the back.
That's right. Makes sense. Okay. Okay. All in favor of adopting lines 8.8 to 8.25 of the Senate language? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Adopted. Okay. Moving right along. The House Section 10, Senate Section 8 on the page R8, there is looks to be about one difference, and it is the sentence on the Senate side, lines 9.1, 2, and 3. The sentence reads, failure to check a box on an application form that a voter has certified to be true does not cause the registration to be deficient. It's the issue of checking the box up here at the top of the card, and then that same information is down here where you sign your signature. And if you miss the box up here, we're suggesting that because you certify that those same two provisions down here, that not checking the box shouldn't make it deficient. Mr. Black, a comment?
Madam Chair, that has been the position of the Office of the Secretary of State, so
okay.
that is not an issue. There is, in the House section, line 10.11 and 10.12, I simply note that the House section is related to the next House section. And this has been, I will say, this has been superseded by the idea of the incomplete registration, which I think that concept actually does appear later in the Senate bill.
Okay. So adopting the Senate side would be okay, because as long as we deal with it later?
As long as we deal with it later.
All right, Senator Barty, do you have a comment?
No,
okay.
Madam Chair, I guess not.
All right.
Madam Chair, if I might.
I'm sorry, but we've been called to a meeting, so we need to wander off.
My question was just, is what we're going to deal with later changing the language in reference to deficient to incomplete?
Mr. Black, I don't think that's what it does, but would you clarify?
Well, Madam Chair, that's the next section talks about deficient because not deficient because you've left something out or it's wrong, but deficient because you didn't provide the identification. One of the refinements we made in 1703 was to really make that clear and break that out into the incomplete. And I think that the Senate bill has picked up on that concept, because the word deficient, well, there are two problems. If you're deficient, you don't even appear on the roster. And if you're incomplete, you appear on the roster, and then you have to show the identification. Yes, also, deficient has a chilling effect on voters, I think. So I just want to make sure we preserve what I think is an improvement, and I'm not sure how we proceed with that given the procedural posture we're in.
Madam Chair, we don't have to go in a minute, but maybe Mr. Black could suggest what language, find the language that you think should be in there somewhere. If it's in either of the two bills, it's fine. Otherwise, it'd be, it's in 1703 and the...
Mr. Black?
Madam Chair, this might be something to work on during the break.
Yeah. Yes.
It's a great idea.
Because the language on the House side, there's Section 11, the amendment to 201.071, adding a new subdivision 4A, I can't find it in 1703. I have looked both last night and now, and I don't find that language. So I wonder if it's been moved someplace or just redone, because in the new 1703, you have an amendment to subdivision 3, and then on page 75, and then you got an amendment to subdivision 9 on page 76, and I don't find this. So,
all right. So if you folks can work on that while we break.
One other thing, and I don't know if we're at the point where we can do that, but I do know we're also looking at time to be concerned. I wonder if there are things that there's a sense that Mr. Michael and Mr. Watson, if there are lots of things where there's just one or two word things that are not controversial things, if they could, I don't know if the committee feels that maybe they could just go and, hey, this one's same except for this, and whichever wording can they could sounds better on a neutral kind of basis. I don't know if there are a lot of those areas that are just that, if maybe they're all bigger substantive things than that, but...
Maybe they can give us some advice on what those are.
Because I think we should try to find ways to speed up the process.
All right. Okay. We're going to recess maybe a half hour, maybe a little longer. 45 minutes.
4 o'clock.
Let's say 4 o'clock. Let's just do that. Okay. We're in recess. Thank you.